Good evening. Getting old, so I gotta sit down. And speaking of getting old, the older I get, the more I worry about the state of my soul with God. I guess that's what comes from getting old, I guess. I'm going to start off in John chapter 1. It says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. And in Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. We probably know all of that by heart. But I get to thinking about these things anymore. And I get to thinking about the state of my soul. And what I've done in my life. And at the times when I wasn't all that close to God, I guess you'd say. And of all things that made me start thinking about the Lord was the work I was doing. I was a policeman. Well, actually, I started when I was 17 years old driving an ambulance. What they called an ambulance back then. And between that time, the time I was 17, and the time I was 55, I guess you'd say I saw a lot. I have no idea how many people I watched in total despair that didn't know the basics of life. That thought they had it made when they didn't. That always thought they had an angle when they didn't. That's attitude. And of course, when I started in the police department, I had an attitude. I could jump higher and dive deeper and come up drier than anybody else. And I took a lot of chances, I guess. And unbeknownst to me at that particular time, I'm convinced now that God watched out for me. I hated riding around with another cop. I did not want to be in the same car with another cop. They say that policemen by nature are loners. I was a loner, probably still am. Firemen have to be in a group. Their personality says they have to be in a group. Cops want to be by themselves. And because I was alone, I could concentrate, I guess you'd say. And since I was bulletproof and didn't have a whole lot of, I guess, what you'd call common sense that I think I have now, I got a lot of stuff done. A lot of this darkness that it talks about here, that the light shineth in the darkness and the darkness comprehended it not. I saw that in my work. I saw that for 33 years. No, 37 years of people that didn't understand what they were doing. That didn't have a hope, that didn't know anything about a hope, that bounced from one disaster, I guess you'd say, in their lives to another. Virgil knows what I'm talking about. He worked with me. Brian knows what I'm talking about. He spent his time in Phoenix doing this. And I don't know how many times you would take somebody in and they would be sitting there in booking and you could watch them for one reason or other, I guess you'd say, or just observe them, and you could see the hopelessness and despair and anger and fear on their faces, and they didn't know how to handle it. They wouldn't have been there had they known how to handle it. There was a lot of cops, no, not a lot, some cops couldn't handle it either. So they took the liquor. And a lot of them were heavy drinkers because that's how they numbed themselves from what they saw and what they did, what they had to handle. Nothing makes you any madder, in my opinion, than to go to an infant's death, and the infant was killed by either the mother or the father because it was crying, and the mom or pop were on drugs, and because the baby was crying, they hit it and killed it. And then you had to take that person in and process them without wringing their necks. To show you how much I got into that kind of stuff, not the baby stuff, but I caught 17 burglars on the inside while I was in patrol on my own. Stopped 3 armed robberies. 1 day shift over in the north end of town. I was bored, and this is before we had computers. So I decided to start catching stolen cars, and I got 7 stolen cars in 1 month that were occupied because I was invincible. I had an attitude, and I guess that's what it took to do that kind of stuff. But every time, and I never caught a burglar on the inside but what he wasn't drunk or stoned. And that tells you something. That tells you something about their personalities. It told me a lot about this darkness. And the more I was around those kind of people, the worse my attitude got. It's called cynicism. And after 35 years or so of that, I was pretty cynical when I retired. I retired in 1997. I'm still fighting it. I guess I know that I'm better because when I go to a retiree's luncheon and I'm around these guys that have been retired for 6 months, boy, they're cynical and I'm not. But I know that I am still. I still have a problem with cynicism because of what I spent my life doing. And that's not an asset. That's not an asset by any stretch of the imagination. I've met a lot of people in this life that don't know the Lord. They have no hope. All their life is anger and frustration and greed. A lot of them were raised that way and don't know any different, as is a lot of our youth in this world today. They grow up by themselves. They have no raising. They don't have a chance. We have our religion. We have the hope by our faith. How often are we aware of our hope because of our faith? How often are you aware of God all the time that you're awake during the week? You know, the Lord created everything in heaven and in earth. That means everything. Everything. The air you breathe, the gravity that holds you to the ground, the clothes you wear, the food you eat, the house you're in, the cars you drive, the economic situation that you're in. Everything is a creation of the Lord. Everything. And it's designed that if you use His processes, procedures, or systems correctly, you prosper. And I'm not telling you that you're going to get rich by money, but you're going to be contented. You're going to be satisfied. You're going to have the trust of your peers. You're going to be appreciated. You're going to be loved. That's prosperity. I guess you'd say I'm going to call them legacy news media today. They're always trumpeting how Christianity is on the decline, especially here in the United States. And that's all we can concentrate on right now with us being here in this United States. Well, that's not what I hear. What I hear out and about, and I'm still out and about enough to hear, the people, especially the young people in this country, are sick and tired of the established religions because of what they are. I'll give you an example. A couple of 3 years ago, there was a pastor of some big mega church that launched on a project within his church to get his fourth jet because he needed a bigger jet to fly further to reach those that were searching. That was his story. And it created a stir, of course, within the media. So they got to interviewing other noted pastors. And they noted this one that's been around for probably 40 years that I know of, and he is a mega pastor. And they asked him about this. And here's a quote on his response. He says, yes, he needs that jet. He says, when you fly a public airline anymore and they see who you are, they're always asking you questions, and you can't pray. You can't raise your hands in supplication to God in the middle and not be interrupted. And besides that, he says, they're always wanting you to pray for them. And that's a quote. That's what this world looks at as religion today. A long time ago, and this was a big lesson for me, a long time ago, when there was a World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, they had a news article on there one time, how the Archbishop of Canterbury over in England had a big, he was going to have a, what do you call it, a video or an interview. A news break, about how the Church of England was going to, they had decided to accept Jesus Christ. This is within the last 4 or 5 years. No, the last 10 years. Now, the Church of England, the church that they have now, the religion that they have now was formed way back when some king who was a Catholic decided that he didn't want to be around his wife anymore, so he wanted to divorce her and marry his girlfriend. So he petitioned the Pope to do this, and the Pope turned him down. So he banned the Catholic Church from England and started his own church, which is the Church of England. That's the start of the Church of England. That's how it started. So anyway, whatever the news organization was, they sent a reporter over to the publicity thing that the Archbishop of Canterbury was holding, and all it was really an affirmation that they accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior, and that's all it was. Well, so the reporter, he goes out on the street in London, and he buttons the holes a few people, and he'd say, "Do you believe in Christ?" And they said, "Well, yeah." And I said, "What church do you belong to?" And, "Well, we belong to the Church of England." "Do you go to church?" "No." "Why not?" "Well, because here is this pastor up there in a richly carved pulpit with a silk robe on, and he's making these great big fancy speeches, and we don't have a clue as to what he's talking about. He's way over our heads, so why go to church when you don't understand what's going on?" And that hit me. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to be like that. I don't want to go up here and waste your time and my time if I can help it. But what that is over there is part of that darkness too. We may not look at it as darkness, but it is. Because right now, England is one of many European countries that really doesn't pay any attention to religion. As a matter of fact, they had an agent with M16 that had one of these Islamic terrorists under arrest, and he was interviewing him. And when you interview somebody, especially on that level, you don't just sit down and put them under a lamp and hit them with a rubber hose and ask questions. You talk to them, and you get them to talking to you. And the idea of his religion came up. And finally he asked the M16 agent, he says, "Do you have a religion?" And the agent says, "Well, no, religions are ridiculous." And the terrorist tells him, "No, you have to have a religion. You don't have a aim in life unless you have a religion." And the terrorist was right. Your life doesn't mean anything if you don't have a commitment to a religion. And for those of you sitting here, I know what your commitment is. But how do you use it? I knew a guy that used to show up at my brother-in-law's mechanic shop. And he was a simple guy, but he was likable. And he changed churches about once a month. And every time he changed churches, he'd come back to the shop with a new slogan. And that was his religion. Like, I was blind once, but now I see. That was one of his slogans. But outside of that, you never knew that he was religious. His religion amounted to slogans. When you counsel somebody, I don't know if anybody's ever counseled anybody in here, but when you counsel somebody, do you just recite Bible verses and expect them to swing around? No. That's not the way it works. But I've seen that happen time again. How do we look at our religion? These young men down here, excuse me there, Milo. How do you look at your religion? What do you think your religion's about? Is it just belonging here to this church? Is it just a membership? So maybe you've committed to be baptized? Is that all it takes? How about your spirit? How about what we call your heart? How about instead of being able to recite any kind of a Bible verse on demand, that you have an attitude that it's in James. It's in James. Let me see here. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this: to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now, I don't expect everybody out here to go find a widow to comfort. And that's not really what it's talking about. They talk about principles back in those days, not rules. They're talking about your attitude. They're talking about your souls, the condition of your soul. What does it take to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction? You see, back in those days, back in the biblical days, when you were a widow or when you were orphaned, you were at the bottom of the pecking order in society. When it comes to society, it was a big deal if a widow or an orphan got any help. You know, they had all these kind of things about if there's a widow, then she has to be married by her husband's older brother and all of this kind of stuff. They had all of these regulations and everything to prevent that from happening. But when that didn't happen, you were left out. Okay, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction means, what is your attitude? What is your attitude about you treating others? What is your attitude about those that can't help themselves, honestly can't help themselves? And I know there's plenty of con people in this world. I've met one or two of them. But that's also called discerning the spirit. And of course, to keep himself unspotted from the world is a whole lot simpler than the fatherless and the widows. But that's pure religion and undefiled according to the Bible. And that probably says more than two or three books in the New Testament. And I say the New Testament because it had the Old Testament was to teach people about God, and the New Testament was to teach them what they got wrong. That's the way I look at it. Doctors tell me when a baby is born, we assume that it knows something. The doctors will tell you that they know nothing, that they are a perfect sponge, and from the day one, they copy what they hear and see. That's how they get attached to their mother, because mom holds them, and mom feeds them, and mom cuddles them. I don't know of any mother out here that hasn't done that from day one, but that's teaching that baby something. And clear up, I don't know when it quits. Maybe it never quits, I don't know. You are always soaking something up from someone else. The only time you don't show that is when you decide you're going to be independent. And that runs anywhere from age 12 to age 50 or 60. And you want independence and you think you're going to rebel, much to the distress of your folks. Religion is easy, but it's hard. You know, the Book of Mormon tells us that we're a natural enemy to God. Now, I don't hate God, and I don't consider myself an enemy to God. But my human nature shows it, because I want to think and I want to make decisions and I want and I want and I want this and I want that. And I think this is right, and I get mad and I can justify it and on and on and on and on and on. So I am a natural enemy to God, and so are you. We become selfish. As long as that goes, and the worse it gets, the Book of Mormon also talks about the linen thread, I think it is. And sin is like a linen thread. You can put your hands together, and I've used this in object lessons when I've been teaching things. You wrap a linen thread. Say this linen thread's a sin. And you wrap this linen thread around your wrist once. You can just break it. Twice, you can just break it. Five times, it's a little harder, but you can break it. Now I'm talking about each one of these wraps is a sin. 50 times, you may not be able to break it, because it's a habit. And that's why you always have to be aware of the state of your soul, is the best way of saying it. You have to be aware of the state of your soul, on what you're doing wrong and what it's going to take to fix it. And we have two books that are very, very good instruction manuals on how to do that. Before Christ came, we had the Old Testament. That wasn't something that was just constructed in a month or a decade or a century. According to what historians will tell you, several historians will tell you, the Old Testament was 700 years in the making, which includes the time between Malachi and Matthew. I have no concept of how to study something for 700 years. I wouldn't even know how to begin to get a subject studied for 700 years. God does. The first five books that they considered the first five books of the Old Testament, the law. And then you had the prophets. And then you had the writings like Ezekiel and Proverbs and books like that. The prophets was a description of what happened when you obeyed God's laws and what happened when you didn't. I don't know of anybody that I've ever talked to that looks at the Old Testament like that. But when I learned that, when I read that, and I'm cynical, so I had to read it more than once, more than one place. When you get to looking at things like that, it's true. Look at Esau and Jacob. Look at Ruth. Look at Obadiah. Every one of those is a story. And it's an important story to me. It's not some kind of a history that I got to labor through. It's information. 1 and 2 Kings. I met a group that I was studying with, and when I got to Kings, 1 and 2 Kings, he said, "Well, we don't pay attention to 1 and 2 Kings." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, how are you going to remember to recite in the proper order all of the kings?" And I said, "Why would you do that?" He says, "Well, that's what it is." He says, "All that is a book on all these different kings. And you're supposed to memorize all of these kings in their chronological order." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, that's what it's for." Now, these are people that were studying the Bible. I said, how about looking to see what they did right and what they did wrong and what about the consequences? And he says, why would you do that? Because that's what it's written for. That's what it was recorded for. You see, like I said earlier, a baby, when it's born, knows nothing. Before Abraham, I'm going to start there. Before Abraham, people didn't know anything about God. People didn't know anything about personal hygiene. They didn't understand it. They still didn't understand it after God started giving Moses those instructions about all of these things. And to help them with these instructions, he gave them ceremonies to do. And they missed the point. They did the ceremonies instead of doing the purpose behind the instructions. They still do it to this day. To those people, everything in the Bible is a ceremony. Everything in the Old Testament is a ceremony, and the New Testament doesn't count. And I had one of those guys working with me. And I could talk religion with him. Well, my religion. And finally I asked him one day, I says, Abraham, and that was his name. I'll give you a clue. I says, what's your belief? What is your beliefs? He goes, we don't have beliefs. He said, we have rituals. Well, it took a while for me to swallow that. Because I was raised totally different than that. But we have all of these things that we're supposed to be following, and how many of them do we make rituals instead of things that matter? The Ten Commandments, are the Ten Commandments something that you recite because you've got it memorized, or are the Ten Commandments something that you have to study to see what they really mean, what's the backstory, so to speak, and what does it, and how does it affect your soul? And when you take those Ten Commandments, it honestly takes the Bible and the Book of Mormon to explain that to you, not page 64, not chapter 7, not a book, Ezekiel, you know, verse 25, not none of that. That helps, but it's a continuum. It constantly goes over and over. It goes over the same things over and over, but it goes over the different ways that you can look at it because of the different ways it happened. There was enough recognition of what these writings were to the rabbis and stuff when they were trying to teach people to wash your hands because that's hygienically acceptable before you eat and things like that, instead of making it some kind of a religious ritual. You know, that's why the apostles got chastised for eating corn before they washed their hands in the New Testament. But when you look at things that way, there's principles to be learned. There's things to be taught. One of the things that's embedded in, I guess you'd say, in the ceremonies of the Levitical priests was, and of course they didn't have jobs. They were able to take a section of the sacrifices for their own use. And one of the instructions to the Levitical priest was, and of course this is before electricity and refrigeration, and before the knowledge of any of this stuff, if you have a heave offering, which is an animal, you get a portion of it. And you may eat it, it may be cooked and eaten the first day. And then you can eat it the second day. But if you eat it the third day, it's an abomination. What's that mean? Cynthia, what does that mean? It spoils. People back then didn't know it. And they made a ceremony out of it instead of following it for what it meant. That's what people do with the scriptures. That's what we tend to do with our scriptures, is make it something that's ceremonial instead of something that, and everything in the Book of Mormon and everything in the Bible has to do with the welfare of our bodies and our souls and our environment. It's all spiritual. You know, I don't know how many times in the New Testament it'll tell you about Christ trying to explain something to somebody and they're taking it to be material instead of spiritual. And therefore they get the wrong idea. We can still do that if we let ourselves. If we look at these two books in the wrong way, I'm going to just say the wrong way, we don't get the information out of them that's really there. And it's the information that has to do with the welfare of our souls, with our health, with our mental health, with our physical health, with our spiritual health. It's all in there. Because when God created the heavens and the earth and everything in them, He created everything that's in this earth and heavens. And there's things that we don't have a clue about that He already knows. All these inventors and scientists and engineers and all of this stuff that over history has invented all of this stuff, they didn't invent anything. They didn't make it out of it. They just discovered it. It was already there. And there's stuff still that we don't know anything about that God already knows everything about, because He made that from the beginning. That's how God is. Rick was talking this morning about how God knows everything about you. That's a paraphrase. That's an understatement, really. He created you. And He knows, He may not agree with it, but He knows what you're going to do. Our kids grew up. When they got to a certain age, we quit micromanaging them because we couldn't manage them anymore. And by the time they were grandparents, all we can do is watch in prayer. That's what God's doing with us. We have our free agency. He gave us our free agency. Excuse me. So that's on us. That's on us of what we do with it. And when we commit ourselves to Him through baptism, and we say that we believe in the Bible and the Book of Mormon, and I know a lot of people that say they believe in the Bible and the Book of Mormon that don't have a clue. I also know people that know a lot about the Bible and the Book of Mormon. What do we know about the Bible? What do we personally know about the Bible and the Book of Mormon that helps us prosper? That helps us trust each other? That helps us with our integrity? That helps us with being honest? That helps us with doing the right thing when there's nobody around to watch us? What have we got, 40, 50 people in here tonight? So we've got 40 or 50 different personalities. Probably got at least 40 or 50 different ways of looking at everything. And there's a prosperity in that. Because if we listened, if we honestly listened to everybody in here when we had a problem, and everybody in here honestly used what's in the Bible to think about that problem. They knew how to do this. We'd get a lot further. I don't know how many schools I went to. I don't have any idea how many schools that they sent me to. But they had a little two-hour thing. There was always, once a month we had a two-hour thing when I was up in administration, and they'd have somebody come in and teach us something about human nature. And one of the things I'll always remember was how to use a grease board in a brainstorming session. And we use the grease board wrong in this church. We don't know how to use a grease board. I've seen it, and I've seen it, and I've seen it. What's the purpose of a grease board in a skull session? Ideas. Ideas. How do you get people to think about ideas? You don't squelch them. You don't put them down. You don't insult them. You don't belittle them. You don't belittle each other. But especially the guy running the grease board doesn't do any of that stuff, because you want a free path to thinking. And then when you get all of the list of things, whatever it is, whatever the subject is, then you can discuss things. But you do it diplomatically and charitably. You never get down to slamming somebody. You never get down to belittling somebody. And there's a process for that. I was taught that, and I forgot half of it, because it's been a long time ago. But it works. It honestly works for problem solving. When you got a big problem and you want to get a bunch of people together and figure out what's going on. Human nature. Being charitable. Having the same attitude that it takes to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. Which is exactly what that takes. Book of Mormon, chapter 7, verse 767. And again, my beloved brethren, I was speaking to you concerning hope. That is something that a lot of people in this world have no idea what it is hope. If half of them had any kind of hope at all, we would have a lot better world. Because it's despair, greed, anger, suspicion, all of these things destroy hope. I would speak unto you concerning hope. How is it that you can attain unto faith, save ye shall have hope? And what is it that ye shall have hope for? Behold, I say unto you that ye shall have hope through the atonement of Christ and the power of his resurrection. You gotta know that, and you gotta believe that, and you gotta lean on that. You gotta understand that. That's basic. That's the foundation. Jesus Christ and the hope that he gives you. Wherefore, if a man have faith, he must needs have hope. Without faith, there cannot be any hope. We know that. We hear that. We hear that. We hear that. Do we use it? Do we know how to use it? Everybody with all of these different personalities in here is going to use it a little bit different. And we have to respect that. That everybody's a little different. And again, behold, I say unto you that he cannot have faith and hope, save he shall be meek and lowly of heart. If so, his faith and hope are vain, for none is acceptable before God, save the meek and lowly of heart. And if a man be meek and lowly, and if a man be meek and lowly in heart, and confesses by the power of the Holy Ghost that Jesus is the Christ, no words, no proclamation, it's a function. You do it, you don't say it. He must needs have charity. For if he have not charity, he is nothing. Wherefore he must needs have charity. That has to do with widows and the fatherless. That's the tie in there. And charity suffereth long, and is kind, and envieth not, and is not puffed up. Seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, and rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, if you have not charity, you are nothing, for charity never faileth. And it doesn't. May not come out the way you want it, but it'll come out right. Wherefore, cleave unto charity, which is the greatest of all, for all things must fail. But charity is the pure love of Christ, and it endureth forever, and whoso is found possessed of it at the last day, it shall be well with them. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, pray unto the Father with all energy of heart, that ye may be filled with this love which he hath bestowed upon all of those who are true followers of his Son Jesus Christ, that ye may become the sons of God, that when he shall appear, ye shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Do you remember back when the Jews were, it was in between the New and the Old Testaments, when they were looking for a Savior? And they just knew he was going to be a military man, and that he was going to come and whip all the enemies of the Jewish people. And instead he showed up as a babe in a manger. They didn't see him as he was. They saw him as they wanted him to be. We shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is, that we may have this hope, that we may be purified even as he is pure. I'm not going to say I've gotten any wiser as I've gotten older. I know I've gotten older. But I guess I've had enough water under the bridge to see how a lot of my life was wasted when I was younger by going different directions. And because of my bumps and bruises and tears and things like that, I learned, I guess you'd say, to pay more attention to what's in these scriptures. First off, to go to the scriptures instead of the bottle. But then to get into the scriptures and to really learn what they mean. Because the one thing that I have retained, I guess you'd say, and I guess it's an asset, is if you tell me something, you're going to have to prove it. And even when I read something, I'm going to have to prove it before I believe it. And I have never gotten into any of the scriptures to look at something that I really didn't think was true and find out I was wrong and then believed. Because I honestly, honestly believe in the scriptures. God saved these things for us. God created these things for us. They have seen the ravages of time. They have seen all of the efforts to discredit it or change it. And it's still here. And I believe that. Thank you.